You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Time to grab your pillow and join the Geek Father in Little Bit for discussions on current, nostalgic, and speculative happenings in pop culture. Nerd news, fandom histories, deep dive discussions, reviews, and more. It's like listening to your closest friends have a nerdy conversation. So sit back, relax, and let the Blurred Nerds podcast embrace you with their warm, goofy goodness. It's Nerd Goals for your ear holes, right here on the ESO Network.
This is full-scale war against the terrible enemy that modern man has never fought.
Evidently, you do not realize you are in an interstellar conveyance. You are already outside the atmosphere of your own planet.
Monster attack! Monster attack! Monster attack! Monster attack!
Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Monster Attack, the podcast dedicated to old monster movies. We've got a special one for you this week. I mean, not only special to me, I'll tell one of my usual stories surrounding this because I do have a good story that goes with the first time I ever saw this particular film. But we've got Madeline back with us again. Madeline, welcome back. It seems like it's been forever since we've talked to one another.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. It has been too long.
Way too long. We were just trying to think a minute ago. It was like Halloween.
It was. I think it was Halloween.
When we did Bell, Book, and Candle.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
See, it's been so long. My old brain, I can't.
No, you got it. You got it right away.
So Madeline made this suggestion for this film, and this is going to be very, very interesting because when I first saw this movie, I saw a different version than the one we're going to be talking about today, and it is Godzilla versus Hedorah. Oh, anytime we could do kaiju, I'm there. I don't think we've done a kaiju together, have we, Madeline?
We did Godzilla. Yeah.
Well, we did Gojira. That's right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's right. You and I did that one.
Yeah. So we did that one.
Did you sit in with one? I was trying to think if you sat in with Mark and I on another one.
I don't remember. Time has definitely passed between.
Yeah. The 6 years. The 6 years that we've been doing this, it's just gone so fast.
Yeah.
So anyway. Great suggestion, because you guys are going to be showing this. So, folks, write this down. If you live in the Atlanta area or live close enough where you can drive in, this weekend on Saturday, just Saturday, right? You
have one day only, two shows.
Matinee. Saturday. Yeah.
We have our matinee at 1:30, right, and then our late show at 10 p.m.
Yeah, and tell everybody who's not in the Atlanta area or whatever where it's going to be shown.
Yes, this is at the Plaza Theater. We've been performing there for a long time, over a decade at this point, and it's just the best. So
it's an awesome little
theater,
and this
is a great one. Is definitely a good family venture, a good film.
Yes,
too. So.
Yes. In fact, if you want to experience this movie like I experienced it in 1972, when it was released under the title of Godzilla versus the Smog Monster, I'd been living in Raleigh. We had moved to Raleigh when I was in high school. I was a senior in high school when this movie came out, and none of my buddies wanted to go see it. I had developed some friends who were sort of monster movie geeks, but they were more into sci-fi. They weren't the lovers of monsters like you and I are, and some of our friends, our monster friends. So when Godzilla made the big screen, it's like, oh, I got to go see this. I haven't seen a Godzilla movie in forever on a big screen. It was showing at an old theater in downtown Raleigh, the old State Theater, which I think has now fallen apart. I think it's gone. And I made the mistake of going to seeing it on a Saturday afternoon matinee. I probably should have rethought that one. The minute I walked into the theater, it was filled with kids who'd been dumped there by their parents all day. And for those of you, okay, by the way, folks, I'm going to put out the spoiler alert. You guys know we spoil everything, but I just like to remind newer listeners, we're going to spoil everything about this movie because it involves some music that that went along with the American version and the Japanese version.
Yeah.
The Japanese version is an anti-pollution message piece of music with a gal singing it, and we'll get into all that in a minute. But the American version translated into Save the Earth, and I walk in, and all of these kids who have been there all day, I think I was like at a 3 o'clock matinee, something like that, singing Save the Earth, and just, Save the Earth, Save the Earth. And it's like, oh, my God. And they knew everything about the, I mean, they knew every line in the movie. And, of course, the American version was a little different. But so that was my experience is like, yeah, maybe I'll watch these on cable from here on out.
That's so funny.
So I was so glad, you know, after Metal and I settled on the date, it was like, oh, my God, I wonder if she's going to talk about the American version. Or, of course, the version I saw doesn't even exist anymore. It got pulled. Toho pulled it. Mm-hmm. It's gone. And I said, I hope it's the Japanese version, and that's the one. And that's the one you guys are going to be showing.
Yes,
right?
We are definitely showing the Japanese version. So
far better than the American version.
For anybody that might be showing up this weekend, this isn't dubbed; it is subtitled. So
yes,
that may or may not change your plans.
But I hope not, because
it's a much better movie. And we've actually shown some films to great with really great turnout for some that are subtitled. So I think just use judgment for whether you're if you're going with small children, if they're going to enjoy
that. If the child can't read, that could be a problem.
I don't know. I mean, there's so much visual storytelling that I don't know how important
I was
going to
say, yeah. I think you can figure this one out.
Yeah.
Even without being able to read the titles.
Yeah.
This movie, now, correct me if I'm curious now, because we have two entirely different experiences. When's the first time you saw this? Did you see it leading up to the Spook Show, or have you seen it before?
So I've seen it before, but I didn't pay as much attention as I did in the past few viewings. So I have a new level of appreciation. And I think when I'd watched it previously, which would have been in the past 10 years or so with the, I don't remember when that fancy Criterion collection came out, the whole set.
Oh, that was 2014, I believe.
So with all the great artwork and,
the Blu-ray edition?
Well, it came with a beautiful book. So not that long ago, but anyway, we would have it on and play. We cycled through all the films and we always have fun monster movies playing in the background because that's the way we live.
Yep.
And this one, I hadn't really paid attention. So now that I've paid attention, I have a new level of appreciation for this film. To answer your question, I really have only seen this film fairly recently, if we're going to reference the my time frame. So
yeah,
it's a good one, I think, to see anytime. It's a very entertaining film.
Oh, absolutely. Well, that leads to where I was going with this, and that is, and this was my first experience, and I don't think it had to do with all the little kids that were screwing the movie up for me that time. This is a different Godzilla movie. I mean, this really sort of stood out to me as a different kind. You know, and it may have had to do with the director, Bono,
mm-hmm.
who stories say that they absolutely hated the guy.
Yeah.
Wouldn't let him do another Godzilla movie. He was banned from directing any more.
Yeah, a lot
Godzilla
of controversy
movies.
About this film. I don't know why they got so upset, but holy cow.
But it is a different Godzilla movie. I thought it had a sort of a different feel to it.
It does.
Of course, you know, when it starts out after the opening titles, which varied. I don't remember the American opening titles, if it was much different than the Japanese ones, because I really tried to forget a lot of that American version. But you go right to this little kid playing with this little Godzilla action figure or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, this Godzilla action figure, which is probably worth thousands of dollars at this point.
Oh, my God, yes. No telling where that is. You know, and it was like all of a sudden I'm like, wait a minute. This kid likes Godzilla? This is like the monster that crushed Tokyo, you know?
I really like that this has this little boy protagonist. I think it's charming. I think it's a lot of fun. And I love the little boy's connection with Godzilla, which I think any child watching this and any adult would like to have their mental connection with Godzilla. That'd be great, right?
Yeah, little Hiroki, I think that's his name. Uh-huh. Guys, you know I cannot do Japanese names. So anyway, this is, and Godzilla was like his career.
Yeah, I mean, he did a whole lot of films.
Seven
but
films.
Yeah, but he did.
But he did another Godzilla
film. He did, yeah. So, and I think he's wonderful on screen.
He is.
The little boy is just, I'm totally interested in how he is going to fare through this whole adventure.
I'm really surprised that he was never tempted to come. I mean, he's only 57 years old. I'm surprised he's never been tempted to come back into the business. And yeah, because there's so much, you know, we keep reinventing Godzilla and, you know, that he wasn't in some of the more recent ones or some of the ones from the 90s. But
who knows? Maybe he may reset.
He still has time.
He does.
You have time. You have time, my friend. We want to see you. But I remember that it was just like when that first came out. When I, you know, it was like, wow, this is going to be a different movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's going to be a real different movie. But I think for folks that were, and I know this is a little before your time, that were around back then, the whole subject, and it's still a very important subject nowadays, of pollution and what we're doing to the planet, and very apropos now with climate change and everything else. Back then it was pollution. That was the big thing, that Japan was coming off of a period where they just had horrendous pollution. And I have to think those were real scenes they were filming.
I think so. I think it seemed like either stock footage or just like shot around town and perhaps waterways and things like that. Some of the scenes are upsetting. I think you and I would find, I think we probably agree without even me prompting you on one of the saddest scenes, just after the like dance party where we hear the scene.
Oh,
the
I know what you're going to say. Yes.
Well, there's all of a sudden they're having this great party. The movie is taking this like interesting turn to like, okay, well now we're in like party mode. Everything must be fine. Yeah. Well, little to their knowledge, there's a giant fight going on outside and Peter S. Sludge is like pouring, cascading down the stairs. Totally gross, right? And then we see this sad little cat.
Like, the cat. Oh, I know. It's a cart tugger.
How did it
survive?
when
he was throwing the stuff at Godzilla, it's like acidic.
Yeah, it eats.
And it burns the kid's father. You know,
it burns the father. The kid recovers no problem, and I can only assume that he's so young and full of healing power. He just recovers immediately. Right. His hand or whatever after he slices through the flying saucer. Right.
But how'd the cat survive? See, this is the cat.
Well,
understand.
Cats
it should have been burned or crisp
as well. So
I guess so.
We just left to interpretation. But the
this was definitely made before the SPCA had to be on set because they just covered this poor cat in goop and it just looked at the camera like, what am I doing?
Yeah, and it's crying.
Here?
It's just like, why am I here? That, and then I think, what else? We also don't know about the fish. I'm not really sure what happened in the fish tank, but this is later in the movie, I'm jumping around here, but.
Oh no, I know we're going to have to do that in this movie, really.
The Hedera is really wreaking havoc throughout, and some of these established things earlier in the film, like this beautiful fish tank and these chrysanthemums and his like play area are all just getting covered in sludge. And then all of a sudden the fish tank just fills with, it looks like nasty, foggy.
We don't know what it is.
Yeah. And all these beautiful angel fish are like upside down. So it's awful, but there is this element of dark humor that I think is important in the film.
Yes,
and
I agree.
I think it helps lighten the mood because it really is, the subject matter is real, and it's important that we make adjustments, and that is, I think, really profound. I think this movie has a long-lasting message about taking care of your planet, and not to be all hokey pokey about it, but it is like it really is important. And I think that's one of my favorite aspects of the film, besides the music, which I would like to talk about the music with you, because I love the music in this film, and so many people hate on it.
I learned to like the Japanese version of the song that she sings, you know, which is the same opening music with the Save the Planet.
Uh-huh.
Because, see, that whole interchange was cut from the American version initially.
So I have
so
not
where the gal,
seen
where the gal
the
comes
American
out on
version, just
right,
so
where
that
she comes out on screen singing and all that at the very beginning of the credits, that's not there. It just basically cuts to the chase. That's my memory of it. Anyway, again, we're going back 40 some years.
See, I love that. It's very
I did too. It was almost
Bond-esque.
Like a James, James Bond.
Oh, I love
film.
It.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
The oil and water and the way the movement of the oil and water is coordinating with the music. And it's very psychedelic and fun and very, very hip, I think. And
was back then. Yeah.
And I couldn't quite verify. The only person I could ask is like my super source on Godzilla was Shane. But I said, was this a theme? Godzilla has a particular theme every time he enters the screen. And I don't think it's used in any other films, but I love it. It's just like, oh boy, Godzilla's coming. And it's really exciting.
That's the one that was one of the things that smacked me so hard the first time I saw it, saying, well, this is a different Godzilla movie altogether, because this is not the music they used for Godzilla.
Right.
You know, this and it is almost sort of humorous, you know, with the blaring trumpets.
We've got this very sharp horn section.
Yeah.
But
and it's like, whoa.
And then it sort of reminds me of when we talked about Bucket of Blood, like the music is very hip and almost feels like we're in a kind of a party the whole movie. But upsetting themes as well. Like Hedera's theme is dark, and we always know when he's entering the screen. And I think that's a really fun element of the musical storytelling.
Oh, absolutely. No, and I think you're, like you said, you almost have to have it, or this movie would be so depressing and so dark. I mean, you know, Gojira, when we talked about that, I mean, that was a dark film, in a different way. This would just have been almost overwhelming. Mm-hmm. I mean, it would have been just really hard to stomach for folks. So I think that offsets quite a lot of that. I didn't quite get that back in 1972 when I saw it, but the more I thought about it, the more it made sense to me, because it just caught me off guard. And I think that's why Toho got so mad at Bono, because this, you know, they wanted a particular kind of Godzilla movie.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to tell a story that had a message to it, a very strong message to it. And one, it wasn't about radiation or nuclear power or the atomic bomb or anything. It was about man destroying man naturally, mm-hmm. almost in a sense, just by polluting themselves. And it's a hugely, hugely powerful message, because you've got this monster, which we don't find out until about halfway through the movie, was some kind of space seed. It came from outer space.
Yeah,
and grew,
I didn't
grew
I,
off the sludge. I didn't know. I didn't catch that
realize
forever.
That until my more recent viewings, because I thought he sort of was born or she.
I thought he was born.
And by the way, I'm not really sure of the sex of the creature. I think more of it's an asexual.
Neither are the filmmakers, because we sort of assume
it's more
she's
like a fog where in it can this just one, sort of are, just sort of be whatever it needs to be.
Right. But when Hedor shows up in a later film, it's a man. It's a male. Uh-huh. So who knows?
It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant, yeah. Truly. Yeah. But
I'm with you. I thought it just sort of created out of
that's
the flesh.
That's right. And I thought it was really a man-made creature, which it is in a way, because the man is fueling it. And that, I think, is powerful. You have, you're putting out this like attraction for a dark situation, and now really terrible things are happening to your people and your environment. And what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
It's almost too late. I mean, we even have this party at what seems to be the end of the world.
Oh, I know. That is so bizarre.
And it's so depressing.
I mean, Yeah, here's this guy. He's the assistant to the big scientist who's trying to figure out how to deal with this. And the guy said, "Well, we're going to die anyway, so let's just go sing a dance."
Party.
And,
I mean, you know, I really think that that's an interesting solution.
Well, but you know, the interesting thing for people my age, and I know folks out there, I know some of you are probably, you hear me say this over and over again about these films of the 50s. And the 60s, and how our mental state was in the 60s, where many of us did not believe we would die natural deaths. We thought we'd go up in a plume of, you know, a nuclear explosion or whatever. We were convinced of that. That was the attitude in 1971. I mean, that still was pretty much just like, hey, you know, we're probably not going to make it much longer anyway, because there's always things heating up around the world. We just thought, which one's going to cause them to press the button?
Yeah.
Which is very apropos for this one. Like I was telling folks a couple weeks ago, we're facing the same thing again. Now I can't believe
terrifying.
This has all come back around.
Oh my gosh.
Around.
Yeah. Terrifying. And, just with current political.
Yeah.
I mean, it's depressing. I'm glad we have these certain escapes that we can have and watch films and check out of reality for a second. But I hopefully the inspiration from some of these films makes
it would help.
Think about what they can
do. We got to work this thing together, because there is a worldwide message here. It's like, guys, this isn't just a Japanese problem. I mean, this is a worldwide problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess one of the points I was going to try to get around to, I always take the long way around everything, is that here you got this monster who's basically a living mineral, according to the professor or the scientist there. And how do you kill that? I mean, how do you kill a rock? You know, it's it reminded me of Monolith Monsters. It's like, you know, how do you kill a rock? You know? That's attacking. That seems to have some kind of intelligence about it. Which makes it even more, I mean, you know, Godzilla's little atomic breath doesn't do much. Mm-mm. You know,
shockingly, Godzilla is really struggling. And Hedera is quite the opponent. You're like, oh my gosh, what in the world? We have to work together. There is that, I guess maybe 20 minutes before the movie is over, you're like, wait a second, is Godzilla not going to do it? Like, are the people going to do it? Like, what?
That's right.
Because then then Hedera sort of comes back all of a sudden. It doesn't quite work.
Right.
And then there's, I think the question for everyone is what are the little white spheres that are removed from Hedera?
Oh, yes.
I was like, well, maybe they're eggs. Like, I don't. No,
I didn't know when I saw it the first time. I wasn't sure either. Yeah. And then somebody said, "No, it's his eyeballs."
His eyeballs, like, and then they
but they were red. You know,
I was like, "But wouldn't you just paint them red?" And then he claimed that they were out of budget. Yeah. And I was like, "I think that sounds like you didn't know." So
yeah, I think so.
So, but
it was a $250,000 budget, folks. So that was pretty good money for even though that was.
But there were a lot
cheap,
of special
it was cheap
effects.
For a Godzilla film.
Yeah, but, a lot of it was really still, special effect heavy, and then there was a lot of really The animation was a surprise. So there was animation and neat optical effects, and you have these suit actors. I mean, it's a huge film.
Well, we can talk about the suit actors real quick, because there's some fun stuff with that. Now they had a new guy playing Godzilla.
Nakajima is in Godzilla, right? Am I correct?
Right. Uh-huh. Right. First time.
Yep.
And here's the thing that kills me. Now, if folks have met me know that I'm a short guy. Nakajima and I are about almost the same height. Previous Godzilla suit guys had been, around 6 feet, fairly large for Japanese, because it was a 300 pound suit that they have to wear. And Nakajima was so strong that he could handle it. And so I never realized how short he was until I'd read about it a few years ago. And then when I went back and watched this movie again, it was like, wow, I can sort of see it. He is sort of littler, you know. you could just sort of tell by the makeup of his body, but he does a great job.
Yeah, the physicality that Nakajima brings to the amazing performance is really we listened to a talk that he gave one time at a convention. We met him and he signed Shane's Godzilla suit. We signed one of the fins. Nice. Which was really sweet. And he took his work very seriously.
And he would play Godzilla from here on out pretty much for a lot of the Japanese versions that were made beyond this. So, he had quite a career.
Mm-hmm. And across from him is Satsuma.
Yes.
And this really very different people. Nakajima was like a lifetime smoker, and Satsuma was this very like healthy guy. Yeah. And both of them, if anybody's had any experience wearing a suit of this nature, it's very difficult. And
oh my God,
it's very hot, and you're in these sets that, well, of course, you're hot just being in these like rubber suits that just ability to breathe is not great, because you're creating your own like humidity cloud inside. Right. Then you're under these very hot lights this is of course pre LED lights, and everything about this is like all you're halogen. Sweating. It's hard to do. You're having to do these big actions on repeat until they get it right. So being a suit actor is no easy feat.
No, I have a lot of respect for these guys. It's just like, and again, they never get to go outside because it's all on set.
Yeah.
And I thought the miniatures in this movie were incredible.
Oh, Shane just brought me this great, I'm sorry, listeners, that we don't have a visual storytelling, but Shane just gave me, he has a picture of Nakajima and Satsuma on their first day of work together here. Isn't that cool? So they signed
outstanding.
For Shane. It's just one of the, look at all these great photos that he's got signed. But this picture is just awesome. I'll include it when I do my little posting.
I was going to say, look for Madeline's post on the show.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Get a chance to say, those are really awesome.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Now the interesting story about the fellow who was in the Smog Monster. I'm going to call him Smog Monster.
Sure. You can call him.
And I call him Hedora.
I also don't know the correct pronunciation. So
I think it is Hedora. I think because I kept thinking, oh, that's right. He's in other movies, and that's what they called him in the other movies. Because he does show up. He will show up again.
Yeah.
I don't think he's against Godzilla ever again, but he does show up, I think, in one of the Gamera movies, if I'm not mistaken. But he becomes sort of a popular character. The fellow playing him, the rumor that went around, the story that went around was that he suffered appendicitis while on the set wearing the Hedra suit, and it was taken to the hospital and operated on in the Hedra suit. Okay,
I think
that is somewhat true, but not really true.
Tall tale. What happened was
that he was giving an interview to a Japanese television station, and he was in full regalia. He had the suit on, and he had the appendicitis during the interview, and they had to immediately haul him off to the hospital. So, yes, he went to the hospital in the Hydra suit, and then they had to get him out of it so they could operate on him. But it was because of it was during an interview for TV, not on the set of the movie. Mm-hmm. So.
but poor guy probably never wanted
to do that ever again.
Yeah, no appendicitis. I have had an appendectomy as well. It's no fun.
No fun at all.
And no, it would have been even worse if I were wearing a giant Peter costume. But very cool, and I would have told the same story.
Of course, and then again, he's in four different versions. I mean, you know, because I mean, you know, Hydra just isn't the little flying saucer thing we see in the beginning. Now he gets legs. I mean, he's got, you know, and they have a little segment in the movie where they say, okay, here's his flying saucer stage, and here's where he's walking stage, and
which I like. I like that there are these fun explanations throughout.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
and this is on the news, I think, is what they're having like a talk.
Yes, yes.
And there is no end of entertainment in this film, from the ever-changing picture of storytelling to the adventure to the end. So you can't, you're never bored watching.
That's right. That's why we're jumping around, folks, because really, if we went chronologically, it'd be over in no time. I mean, it's a very fast-moving story.
Yeah, and it's 90 minutes, which seems like it's
a full hour and a half.
Yeah, it's not. It seems like that would be quite long for like a children's. Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say this is a children's film, but I would say it.
Not really.
No. I do think when Bono did the film that he must have had the idea that this would be relevant to both adults and children, that it really had sort of a family impact. And that I think is very, very special.
Well, I think it shows how important he considered the subject matter, because with this kind of subject, you really want to reach out to the children, mm-hmm. because they're the ones that are probably going to solve the problem. I mean, it's like, you know, all of the anti-pollution messages that were on television growing up in the 60s and the early 70s were geared towards us, because it was like, now your parents have already screwed it up, man. They're not going to change, but you can. And it was. We were the ones that were into the anti-litter campaigns and the cleanup campaigns and things like that. More so than, you know, I'm sorry, Mom and Dad, I'm not giving you a knock.
Well, they just didn't know.
They just didn't understand the significance of it.
Yeah, you think about certain things that you learn as you are older, and you're just like, wait, why didn't anybody tell me about this when I was 12? It didn't occur.
That's right.
People didn't. It's like putting sunscreen on back in. Yeah. It didn't even register. It didn't. Nobody really knew that was going to be something. If you tanned all day with baby oil, that it was going to potentially give you skin cancer in the future.
Right.
You know? Yeah. I was just like, well, it's things like that where you're just, okay, well, and that I think there is this moment in the film. So we are following this little boy protagonist, and which I think is very important that we're following a child, because then I think something really special happens is the boy gives a suggestion and it's accepted by the parents, I think is amazing, because that's not, how many films have we seen where the child comes up with a solution and they're immediately written off because it's a kid.
That's right.
And
that was a common theme in a lot of American monster
like
movies.
Why children experience this all the time. And this is like part of growing up. You try to like make a suggestion or you have an idea, and because you're a child, nobody cares. But parents and this very, affluent, like the scientist, the leading scientist, he says, wow, okay. Yeah. And then son and mom go out and get this, like, I guess a battery or a capacitor. I can't quite figure out what they're bringing. And he sets up this like
some kind of battery. Yeah.
Something. And he sets up these two electrodes, and then he does his little test experiment, all because of a suggestion. And like, how do we brainstorm to solve this problem? And it wasn't like, oh, the kid is brainstorming by himself. He brings it up to somebody that can help, which I was like, wow. Yeah. So we're trying to teach children about your allies and then also like adults that your children are your allies. And I think
that's right.
That's really very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, there have been, and I think Mark and I have talked about this, where there was a tendency of Godzilla films to gravitate more towards children. I don't know if it really started with this film, because I don't think that was its intention necessarily, but where they would be the total protagonists in future Godzilla films, and some that aren't very popular among some of the kaiju lovers. But this is different. Like you were saying, this is different. Mm-hmm. This kid is actually, he sort of got hit together.
He does. He really and nobody does. Question, like, I mean, he has this connection with Godzilla and the parents are like, okay.
Right.
Sure. Yeah. They don't make fun of him. They don't say,
He's almost got like a psychic connection with him. I mean, it's not over.
She says something like, the son has a dream and he's like, Godzilla is coming. And without even batting an eye, the mother says, well, then he certainly is coming. She's not like, right. Oh, it's just a dream, son. It's silly. She's just like, sure. Yeah. Cause you have that special connection and we're going to trust your intuition, which I'm like, well, I mean, that can be seen in two extreme views, but I think in a way that is very endearing and sweet. And I think a real thing a mother would say.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, my son is exploring new ways of discussing his thoughts and he's sharing his truths with us. And it's, you know, no big deal. So she just handles it like a perfect mother. And it's just like sweet.
And of course, the assistant to the professor is portrayed as sort of this totally reckless end of the world.
Yeah, party.
Who cares?
I love every good scientist needs a party.
So the little kid's the one that's got. Yeah, the little kid's got the common sense. This other guy says, we don't care.
Whatever. I'm gonna play my guitar and party till the world ends. Okay.
Party until it's 1999.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, he was ready.
Oh my god. Yeah. So many things to go, and if you're in love with lava lamps, folks, you're going to love this movie. They use
oil and water, lava lamps, girls in cool outfits. Shane promised to. And I'm announcing this over the air because now I need this to come true. He said he would paint me the same like neat nautical suit that she's wearing when she's.
Oh, that's awesome! Yeah, I love it.
With the jellyfish and the starfish and the very cleverly placed shell. So I'm looking forward to this new bodysuit that Shane is going to paint for me. So there you go. Now he's got to do it.
He's got to do it, Jane. You got to do it, Jane. That's right. Everybody's found out. So let's cut to the chase here. We go to the ending and. Actually, even though it looks like Godzilla is not going to win this battle, he's the one that saves the day in the very end, even with the gizmo that the professor comes up with because of the little kid's suggestion. They build these two big electrodes.
Very quickly, I might add. How impressive. Yes.
Oh, I know. Yeah. But they put that together really fast. Yeah. I know. It's like in a matter of days.
Where are these kinds of crews? We need them.
Man. Yeah, that's what we need here. That's right. We could use that right here. Yeah. Unbelievable. But then I get such a kick out of it because they get it. They have to.
They're like, no, but wait.
They have to bait him into getting between these two electrodes, these big, huge electrodes.
Flash your
And
lights.
Once they get him in there, they blow a fuse. Yeah. It's like, oops.
Technology fails again. Well, it is based in reality. Like you can do everything right, and then all of a sudden, oh no, a fuse is burst or whatever, or popped or whatever the term is. But
First Godzilla and Hedra knock all the power lines down. They have to repair them quickly.
Yes.
Boy, I'll tell you, we need them here when the power goes out in Atlanta. Right. I got to tell you that.
I like how they were animated too. There were no people. They were just little animated figures that looked sort of like people. But that was fun. I like the way they lure him in just with flashing headlights. Hedera's like, oh, yeah, well, there must be pollution over there.
Yeah, let's go check this out. Yeah.
Surely that means gasoline and terrible fumes. So,
Oh, yeah.
I love
the little animated sequence. Now, the Japanese one is different than the American one.
Oh, really?
Oh, excuse me. And I can't remember to be honest with you, the American one is so forgettable. I don't even remember what it was. I know they had an animated sequence like that during the newscast, but this was really, the Japanese one wasn't really during the newscast. They just threw it in there.
They just threw it in there.
Where the factory is eating up the planet pretty much.
That's
and then
right.
All of a sudden, here comes Smog
and
Monster.
And then there's the musical number returns. And then there's like all these squares. And then it keeps like zooming out and there are more squares. And then there's like,
right.
I don't know if this is a joke or supposed to be disturbing, but it's funny and it shouldn't be. Is the screaming baby in the
oh, I know. Yeah, yeah.
But the baby's in like a pile of sludge and it's just crying and like clearly like not having
with all of the brilliant brain trust talking on it. You know,
that's right.
It's almost like
Hedera
we see
like
nowadays.
And then you just keep your eye keeps going back to the screaming baby just there on the bottom left square, just like why? I don't know if they did that because they thought it was funny or what, but
both ways I took it as, and again, this was pre-internet, folks. So we didn't have social media experts like we do nowadays where everybody's an expert.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the impression I got. It was like, it was almost like a precursor to what we would be exposed to nowadays with all of these talking heads on cable TV mm-hmm. who were all experts on everything. And it caused more disinformation than anything you can do. Again, I'm getting political. I got to.
Yeah. Well,
out.
I think this is,
but then you've got this, but you got this little screaming baby sort of like, you know, whining in the corner there while all these people are just ignoring it, you know, and it was like, you know,
I think
some attention here, but we've got to make our point.
Maybe that's a message about getting the bigger picture.
Well, I think it is.
Yeah,
I think it is, and I think it's very apropos nowadays. Mm-hmm.
And it was a really interesting way of storytelling there.
Yeah, yeah. And these were all the things that really, I think, upset the Toho guys. Because it was like, I mean, this was,
it was too cutting edge.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the more I see this film, the more impressed I get with it. It's like how prophetic this guy was in seeing things and the way the world was progressing. He really had his hand on some. He was a little ahead of his time on that one.
Yeah, and for anybody I've talked to about where this has come up in conversation, this is. A lot of people, this is one of their favorites, if not their favorite Godzilla film.
It's right up there with me. I mean, it'll never replace Gojira. That'll always be the number one
definitely.
On my list. But yeah, this is definitely very high up. In fact, when Siskel and Ebert reviewed this film, this was Roger Ebert's favorite Godzilla movie. He was one that...
Yeah.
Felt, and everybody said, you're crazy. Because this film was not well received by a lot of people when it came out in 72 here in the United States.
Yeah.
Saying, it's crazy. It's not a real Godzilla. You know, all the same criticisms that Bona was exposed to. They really got after him. The thing is, he got very, he wanted to make a sequel to this.
Yeah.
It kept getting canned, and then it got to the point where Toho said, no, we're just banning you from it. Tanaka said, you're not doing any Godzilla movies ever again.
And
he got involved with the American release in 2014, the one that which when you look at it, and a lot of people criticize that Godzilla movie, which I sort of liked. I thought it was entertaining as hell.
Mm-hmm.
Makes similar statements. It's a statement movie as well. I mean, about the crazy politics.
Yeah,
and,
I think there's
and all the things that went wrong in that movie.
Yeah.
So I mean, at least he got a chance to say his message again, even though there's still a lot of people that go to get down on that film. I like that film. I really did. I thought it again, that got more back to the radiation message, and you know, take responsibility for what we had done,
right?
Playing around with all this atomic power, so
true.
I've come to respect this guy quite a bit. I mean, it's like, yeah, dude. I wish they'd let you tell your story. Well, as we wrap up here, any final thoughts?
Well, I think it's important to remark on Godzilla's feat of flying.
Oh, yes. I haven't even mentioned that. Yes, please. Take it away. Take it away. You're right.
Well, this is the, I am pretty confident in saying this is the only film where Godzilla flies.
Yes, it is.
What's the other one? What's the other one? I just heard from Shane. He said, no. What's the other one? Godzilla versus Megalon, he says.
Oh, I have to go watch it.
Is this the first time, though?
Well, this is definitely the first time. I haven't seen Megalon in a long time. I'll have to watch that again. I'll check him out on that.
And as I remarked earlier, we're at this moment where Godzilla's fighting and all of a sudden Hedorah gets up and walks away. And that moves very rapidly.
Yes.
And so Godzilla's like, all right, then. I'm a fly too. So yep. it really puts a smile on your face that we're still watching.
It got my attention the first time I saw it. I was like, whoa, wait, where'd that come from?
And then you start feeling like, okay, whatever's going to happen next, good things are going to happen.
Yeah.
And it really is by the end of the fight, it was a group effort.
Yes.
It was Godzilla. It was the scientists. It was everybody that the child, the mom, the team of people that built the electrodes. Even though it didn't quite work right, Godzilla comes to save the day.
He made it work right. So he
with got all it. Of us yeah. all working together. So yep. that it it's a lo- so much fun.
A lot of fun. And of course, they left you a question at the end. Is there going to be another?
And I love Godzilla's like, all right, you idiots. Like, come on.
Yeah.
He gives you this look of, all right, I'm not doing this again. Like, you clean up your trash.
That's right. That's right.
Mama Godzilla is like, all right, clean up your room.
That's it.
Dum-dums.
What else can we say, folks? Godzilla versus Hedorah. If you're shaking your head listening to this going, wow, really? Check it out if you're in Atlanta Saturday night. Either.
Yeah, either 1:30 doors are at
10 o'clock.
Or 10 o'clock, doors are at 9:30.
Yeah.
Thanks so much. Yeah, hope to see you there.
Plaza Theater on Ponce de Leon,
man. October, yeah.
All right, Madeline, we're not going to make it months. We're getting our schedules worked out now. Yeah, yes. So we got to come up with another one. Excellent suggestion. I was so tickled when you said that one. It was like, yeah, we got to do that. We got to do that. So anyway, always great to have you sit in with us. Like I said, yeah, I can't wait to hear what you come up with next. Shane, as always, it's been a pleasure. And we got to get Madeline to work here now. So folks, have a great week. I gotta get to work myself. Well, not today. Yeah. Today I actually have a day off today, so I was glad we were able to do that. Yeah. So anyway, folks, have a great week. We'll have a whole new episode for you next Monday. I have no idea who's going to be sitting in or whatever, but stay tuned. And thanks for your support. And don't forget to cast your ballot for us for Best Podcast with the Rondo Awards. Go to the Facebook page. It'll tell you how to do it. We'd appreciate your vote. See you next week, folks.
There are a lot of great podcasts that review Doctor Who episodes in order. The Earth Station Who podcast is not one of them. Just like the Doctor, we never know where or when we'll end up, but we'll have a lot of fun talking about it. From Classic Who to New Series and Big Finish, join the Earth Station Who crew wherever fine podcasts are found. Earth Station Who as a founding member of the ESO Network.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping at the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.